gold finger. He's the man with the Midas touch. A spider's touch. Such a cold finger beckons you to enter his web of sin. Kiss of death from Mr. Goldfinger. Pretty girl, beware of this heart of gold. This heart is cold. Golden words he will pour in your ear, but his life can't.
I truly wish that I had not selected that song to open with tonight. In listening to the words of this music, I began laughing to myself. There is an individual on television that I absolutely cannot stomach. I don't watch her. She's rude, she's crude, she's a piece of human caca. But something happened on Joy Behar's program, The View, last night. She and her colleagues were discussing this Carl Nassib's announcement on their ABC show. And I don't know if you know who Carl Nassib is. I didn't know until I saw this thing. This guy is a member of the NFL, and he's come out as the first openly gay player. And Behar said, well, I know he's the first active NFL player ever to come out as gay, but come on, it's 2021. Is this such a big deal? Of course, then after being told by her co-host that it was a big deal, she joked, oh, well, you know, after they said, I just had something pop up on my stupid screen because I forgot to shut it off. So she says, well, you know, after they said penetration in the end zone, they lost me. And then I'm listening to Goldfinger and some of the oddball words in that program. Oh, my goodness gracious. Good evening. I hope you've had a few laughs out of that. What the heck? It's a crazy world we're living in. It's totally, completely insane. But kind of like what we did yesterday with this little good news today stuff. Some things are starting to happen in Congress that the opponents don't like. You've heard about this character who's the nominee to head the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, David Chipman. Well, Joey's regime received another blow on Tuesday. This Republican Senator Susan Collins, who's sometimes Republican, sometimes not. Oh, she's voted for some of Joey's nominees, but openly came out and announced she would not support Chipman's controversial nomination. After meeting with Mr. Chipman, listening to Mainers, she says, and reviewing his record, I've decided to vote against Chipman's nomination to serve as the ATF director. In recent years, Chipman has been an outspoken critic of the firearms industry and has made statements that demean law-abiding gun owners. So then the senator goes on to criticize Chipman as a divisive pick who has potential to infringe on Second Amendment rights. And as he has the right to express his views, she believes that this history makes him an unusually divisive pick for this important position. In particular, she said, I'm concerned that his confirmation would do significant damage to the collaborative working relationship that must exist between ATF, the firearms industry, sportsmen and women, and other law-abiding gun owners exercising their Second Amendment rights. Wow. Oh, my goodness. She maybe finally woke up and did something right. Oh, my goodness. Chipman was challenged last month by Republican senators on the Judiciary Committee due to his anti-Second Amendment rhetoric. I'm not going to share all the various different comments, but, oh, and Senator Joe Manchin, the Democrat from West Virginia, who's considered a swing vote for the Democrats, has not yet indicated whether or not he will support Chipman's confirmation. But as of today, Susan Collins has delivered a blow to controversial Biden ATF nominee's confirmation. Delivers a blow. Oh, no, we're not going back to the Joy Behar story. Interesting stuff. But here's the one that really struck me with a little bit of good news today. You understand what the so-called For the People Act is, don't you? Oh, it all sounds so good, like it really is for the people. This is what the Democrats are trying to use to basically make the election process even dirtier and dirtier than it already is. Well, guess what happened today? In the words of Roy Orbison, it's over. The Senate Republicans defeated the Corrupt For the People Act. They torpedoed it. For the People Act is a federal takeover of elections. They did it today. The legislation received 50 affirmative votes along party lines with no Republican support. The Democrats were unable to overcome the Republican filibuster to move forward with the legislation. Ted Cruz stated that the, what he calls the Corrupt Politicians Act, provides welfare for politicians with a 6-to-1 match of campaign donations with taxpayer money. Senator Bill Hagerty says that S1 is an unprecedented power grab and blatant attempt by those who are in power, by the slimmest margin possible, to overhaul and rewrite election laws for all 50 states in one fell swoop. Richard Shelby, senator, said S1 would permanently tip the scales in favor of Democrats by politicizing the FEC, pouring federal tax dollars into campaigns, and chilling free speech. Do Americans really want their taxes going toward a federal campaign fund that would finance the expenses of all candidates? Shelby then went on, and it's simply amazing. He also said that it makes election fraud easier to commit, harder to detect by allowing unlimited ballot harvesting, undermining voter ID laws, making it more difficult to maintain accurate voter lists. He said it's a bad bill. I oppose it vehemently. There's a state in this country, and I cannot remember. I read it this morning, and it blanked on me. I cannot remember which state it was. Has basically, if I recall, has wiped the voter registration clean, which is going to require people to re-register. I hope, in fact, I understood that correctly. Little Mitchie McConnell made a statement recently that the biggest lie being told in American politics has been that the states are involved in a systematic effort to suppress the vote. That's not happening. He said, as we all know, we had the biggest voter turnout last year since the year 1900. It goes on and on and on. Some interesting stuff. Very, very interesting stuff. And I do, yeah. It's Something interesting I have come to the conclusion of, and I wrote a rather satirical piece when she was elected. Kristen Sinema from Arizona is ticking the Democrats off. Oh, she is a Democrat. Well, at least she was elected as one. And I have begun to have greater and greater respect for her because she is standing on her own two feet, not playing the Democratic Party game. She's addressing each individual issue one-on-one and addressing it based upon how legislation is going to affect individual states, individual people. All of that's pretty interesting. The Democrats' S1 is an unprecedented partisan power grab that seeks to undermine the sanctity of the ballot by codifying a federal takeover of local elections. The Democratic Politicians Act seems to eviscerate widely supported voter ID requirements, use taxpayer dollars to bankroll political campaigns. Those words from Chairwoman Rona McDaniel in a release where she continued by saying Americans understand states should run their own elections, not unelected bureaucrats in D.C. And as Democrats continue their assault on election integrity, the Republican Party remains committed to making it easier to vote and harder to cheat. Notably, Vice President Kamala Wanaswala presided over the vote that caused a major priority of the Biden administration to fail. And I don't know what the hell that has to do with any of this. Quite overpowering, isn't it? Makes for an interesting day. A couple of strange things. I've been doing some updating to websites as time allows. And I've not had much time. I am tired out. I've made this very plain and clear. You've got some issues going on in the home we're trying to rectify. Yesterday had to call my garage door guy and get him out here to do some service for us. And to the point I wouldn't even remove a car out of the garage. I was scared to death that the garage door was going to fall on that car. He came out, made a couple of adjustments, got everything lubed up, and it's like, oh man, this thing's nice and quiet. We obviously haven't been lubing it for a while. But there was a couple of other issues which he took care of, and I've got him putting together a bid for me to do some other work. Just lots of stuff going on. Things I'm trying to get done here at the house. We're going to tackle a project after I get off the air tonight that is something that kind of spooks me, but I've seen it enough that I think I understand that we can do it. We've done some minor carpet stretching in the lower living room, as I told you, and we've got to get this thing tacked down tonight. I've got to get this room put back together, and it won't take long to do it. Probably take a half an hour max, you know. Got one other piece of furniture I need to pull out of the hallway, clean it up. It's actually a piece of furniture that was built in the late 1960s by an old Hollywood actor, a guy that at one time had been married to Dinah Shore. His name was George Montgomery, an amazingly talented guy. Not a bad actor, not a great actor, but not a bad one. He was a painter. He was a sculptor. And he was a furniture manufacturer. He manufactured furniture to serve modern-day purposes of old style. I have a stereo system that looks like a roll-top desk. Got some good speakers inside of it, and in order to get the benefit of it, you've got to pop open these doors and leave them on an angle. Big bass in the front. It's got a turntable in it. Oh, yeah, turntable. The whole, you know, 78 RPM, 33, 45, whoop, even a 16. Turntable still works, but one of the you know, because it takes stacks. You can stack albums up inside of it. I can't remember what we used to call those. But that piece is not holding. But the turntable still works. The interesting thing is this thing is all tubes. And there are some tubes that need to get replaced. A lot of dust inside. I got to blow it out, vacuum it out, all that kind of stuff. And I haven't really used it in years because I think that when my grandkids were younger, they got behind it and started playing around with wires and move some things. And I turn on the FM, the light for the AM turns on. It's crazy. But I'm going to move that down in the room. We're cleaning it up and polishing it. And I've got some people that are interested in buying it. And I got to start lightening the load around here. And many of us need to do that. So I've not been publishing a lot of stuff. I don't think I've published anything new I think I published yesterday or late last night a piece on Social Security on Sierra Madre Precious Metals. Now, you're going to notice this is not totally an economic program tonight. There's a good reason for it. I'll share that with you in a few minutes. This interesting piece came out a couple of days ago that I had not seen. Maybe I'd seen it and just kind of bypassed it. I've shared with you, we've got some newer cars, some older cars, etc. And the car that I drive the most is my 2003 Nissan Pathfinder. 214,000 miles on it. Original engine. Car's never been hit. Original upholstery, which needs to get redone because the seats need to get bolstered up. They've just kind of sunk out now. And I love those old vehicles. It's got a 6-CD deck. That thing needs repair or replacement. And I think I've found one. I'm just going to buy a replacement for it and put it in there. It's an OEM. Because I'm an old-fashioned guy. I know I at one time had a record player in a 62 Falcon that I drove from Illinois to Arizona. And my sister and I would play 45 RPMs in it, you know. But I got a lot of CDs. And I don't like the single. Every time it's done, pop it, put a new one in. No, give me a deck, it's ready to go. I don't need all this other stuff, this computerized junk. I don't necessarily want the whole phone business in the car. I've got a phone with me. I do have a portable speaker that I will use if I want to, if I need to. But all the rest of the stuff I don't need. I like an old-fashioned vehicle. So when I start looking at this particular headline, the average age of cars and trucks on the roads in this country today has jumped to a record, which is what the author calls the circular problem for automakers. I call it the circle jerk for automakers. How do you sell more new vehicles when they last longer every year? You don't. I got to be honest. I don't think a single one of the other cars we own will last as long as this Pathfinder. Over two decades of stagnation in vehicle sales has been interrupted by plunges. That's right. The average age of all cars and light trucks on the road in 2021 in this country, regardless of how many times they've been traded, jumped by about 2 months from last year. The average age of a car in this country is at 12.1 years. Mine's older than that, man. Average age means that a portion of the vehicles are removed from the national fleet at a much younger age, either because they were scrapped following an accident or a national disaster. Maybe they were exported as used vehicles. Also means that a portion of the vehicles on the road are far older, with a good bunch in their high teens or older, with proper TLC and still running fine, baby, just like mine. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I just had mine in last week having some work done, too. We had a little issue going on and some bearings need to get replaced. And I'm telling you what, it's like driving a new car. It's solid on the road. Now, our author continues by saying, one reason for the rise in the average age of vehicles over the decades is the improved durability of the vehicles foisted upon automakers by finicky Americans. In an ultra-competitive market where slipshod quality and inadequate durability can doom automakers, or at least crush sales for years. Improving durability is a factor every year in the growing average age. Can you think of any American car that was built in 2003 you'd like to still be driving today? Oh, each one of us has got some favorites and stuff like that. I understand that. But good Lord. You know, the plunge last year was 14% in new vehicle sales. What's it been this year? I mean, maybe they're up because COVID money. Oh, yeah, baby. People be out there buying new cars with the COVID money. Hey, Uncle Joey, he sent me some green, Jim. And I got 7 kids, so, you know. Yeah, right. I told you it's going to be a little off-the-wall program tonight. Let me share with you why. Because I want you to, and then I roll all the way to the bottom of the screen, and there's a video called, Should Shingles Be Removed? Well, yeah, if you've got to replace new ones on the roof, why wouldn't you? Or is he talking about the other kind? Never mind. This past month or so has been, as I've shared with you all, it's been quite interesting. The amount of precious metals that this one client of ours has chosen to convert into a massive amount of cash has been a boom to many of us. As I've shared with you, his desire is to pay off a house, pay off his bill on his solar system that he'd installed, his car. I know he's heading in for the first step of his major dental overhaul tomorrow, but he's got plenty of money to take care of that. And then all of a sudden, out of the clear blue, he sends me a bunch more silver. Now, I didn't know he had this much more he wanted to get rid of, and you know, we talked about it on the air. Interestingly enough, last Friday, and I don't do economic conversation on Fridays. Fridays are typically the weekend, you know. And we talked about the collection of silver pieces that we made available. And the more I continued to do the program, I was getting orders by email, by text, mostly by text. And we had one couple that picked up, I had made reference to a small little thing, a little bit of this, a little bit of that. I think it was a roll of Eagles and a partial roll of something else. I had one couple that grabbed that in a heartbeat. Several different, couple of different types of Mexican coins. The one of them I referred to is the screw loose or something like that. It's a Mexican peso. It was called a printing press. And we had some of those, and we had the Libertas, and all of those sold like instantly. They were sold before I got off the air. Okay. And it let me down to just a few rolls, and I basically got those committed to a client. And the thing that has become interesting to me over the last year plus is the misunderstanding that an awful lot of people have about value. Well, geez, spot is this? How, you know, spot's $26. How come you're charging me $45 or $44 a coin? Well, for starters, I don't set the markets. And I'm not charging $44 for every coin. This is one specific example, and it had to do with one of the Mexican pieces. And yet at $44, I felt guilty doing it. But on the other hand, competitors are out there at $54 to $58 for the same exact coin. All right, I'm not trying to stick up for myself or anything else. There's a thing called supply and demand. We've talked about all these things before. I don't care if you're talking about cars, gold, silver. It doesn't make any difference what we're talking about, okay? It's a reality factor. I'm actually trying to find an image right now that I'm not going to find it quickly enough, so I'm not going to bother. I will have a better chance of locating it by going to get out of here, close down. Just bear with me. I'm going to open something up because I will be able to find what I'm looking for. It'll take a moment. And there's a reason for it. And part of this is going to save a little bit of time as some folks I'm talking with after we get off the air. And it is unique. Gold and silver, I don't care if they're up. I don't care if it's down. Oh, my God, I got to get rid of this stuff. Silver's tanking. Or, oh, my Lord, look how much money I've lost in gold. Blah, blah, blah. Wake up, people. Doesn't work that way. Simple, simple terms. And that's why I'm trying to rapidly find this piece, because it'll make a difference in our understanding of what precious metals do, what they have done throughout history. Here we go. Got it. Now, I've shared this story with you before. I posted this in February of last year. There's a guy telling us a story, a guy named Mark. 1978, I made $10 an hour installing air conditioning. I wonder how much money an air conditioning installer gets paid today. My nephew does it. He's pulling 18 to 20 bucks, maybe more. Now, this guy is telling us that he bought a brand new truck that cost $6,800. Now, this is a Ford, two-door, none of this four-door business, you know. Maybe it had AC, maybe it didn't. $6,800. Try 40 grand today. He said, I rented a two-bedroom house for $300 a month. Gas was 60 cents a gallon. Food and insurance were cheap. The same job today pays maybe 17 an hour. The truck is 40,000. The house is 1,400 a month. And I'm sure it's much higher than that now. And the food costs are seven times more. He says, how can people of our country advance in life like this? Now, at one point, I had this published on an article. Now, I subsequently have deleted that article because movements have happened. Gold is up, silver's up, the cost of trucks are up even more. But the point is, don't buy gold or silver if you're expecting to make a killing. That's not the reason for buying it. Yeah, I think we can do that. Or maybe not. Let it go. I got plenty to do. Forget it. Thanks. I have shared this story many times. 1958, I'm 10 years old. In the summer, I'm up at, all summer long, I'm up at my grandfather's and great-grandmother's. He says, come on, we're going to town. What, Eagle? He says, no, we're going over to Maquantico. All right, what's up? I go to the bank, and then we'll go have lunch with Thea. Oh, this is cool. Thea was my grandfather's girlfriend. He'd been divorced for a number of years. And Thea was a cool gal. She had a lovely two-story country farmhouse of her own. Big barn across the street, which is full of antiques. She ran a business out of it, selling furniture and, you know, whatever. So I figured, okay, we're going to get to go see Thea. That's cool. I like Thea. She's a great gal. We go down to the bank in Maquantico, and he says, come on in. So we go in there. They sit us down in a vault room and bring a bag of peace dollars. We start going through them. He says, okay, I want you to find the nicest, cleanest one you can find. We're going to put them together by dates, blah, 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 blah. All right, so we do this, and he puts some rolls together, and he winds up buying some of them, and we leave. We go have lunch with Thea. We went back a month or so later. I finally asked him, Gramps, why are we doing this? He says, well, son, the day is going to come that they're going to do the same thing to the silver in our money that Roosevelt did with gold. They're going to take it out. And the money is going to lose value. Oh, okay. Well, at 10 years of age, you don't fully understand all of this. But, and folks, that was 63 years ago this year. 63 years ago, and I still remember the story. I can see it. And, you know, at 10 years of age, I wasn't making a ton of money. I mean, I'd shovel snow and for some people, and I cut some grass, got paid a few bucks for this, a few bucks for that, and I had some money. I was 10 years of age, and I did it when I was 10, 11, 12, 13, etc. And a buck a piece, the most beat-up peace dollar you can find today, worn out. Scratch, scrape, ding. 12 to 15 bucks minimum. And nicer ones are 30 bucks, and others are worth more because they're considerably rarer. Now, isn't that interesting? Something that I paid a dollar a piece for 63 years ago will still buy the same amount of gas or food that could have been purchased 63 years ago. Those are the reasons for having stuff like this. Now, I'm not getting into sales pitch for peace dollars, please. I haven't done that in years. I haven't gotten a decent enough price on any of that stuff for a lot of years. But that's just kind of the lesson plan I share with you. How many of those peace dollars would it have taken to buy that $6,800 truck back then? Or let's say, and of course, $6,800, we're already beyond it. Because this was some 15 years after they took the silver out of our money. But the point is, how many of those silver dollars would it take to buy that same car today, given the fact that they're worth, let's just say the average at 30 bucks a piece? 30 times what its face value was. Not bad. Take it to gold. And I've got to update this piece and put it in. What were the markets today? Let's take a fast look. I'm going to tell you right now, I'm not spending a lot of time looking at this stuff day in, day out, hour by hour by hour. I don't have time for it. It doesn't matter anymore. Gold's within a couple of bucks from where it was yesterday, $1,783 an ounce. Wait a minute, what was it in 1978? $44 an ounce, folks. Wake up. It was $44 an ounce in 1978. In the case of the truck, sure. How many ounces of gold would it have taken? We'll just use spot. That's all we're going to use, is spot. $44 an ounce. So you take, how much was that truck? $6,800. $6,800 divided by $44 an ounce. Would have taken 154 and a half ounces of gold to buy that truck back then. Don't you wish you had 154 and a half ounces of gold in your possession today? And this is a fairly basic truck, so we'll take 40,000 today. 40,000 divided by just spot, 1783.9. Oh, my goodness. It would take less than 22 and a half ounces of gold to buy that same truck today. How many ounces would you still have left over? Those are the reasons for owning gold and silver. Not necessarily to get fat cat rich. Don't play the little Bitcoin game when Bitcoin opened up at, you know, $100 an ounce or whatever, or $100 a Bitcoin, and then went all the way up to 70 and 80. Now it's down below 30. Oh boy, Bitcoin took a royal bath this week. Who cares? It's all a dream. It's all paper stuff. Well, it's digital paper, but it's paper. Those are the reasons for owning gold and silver. If you happen to make money, that's good. If you can break even, that ain't bad. That's a lot better than you'll do with a dollar bill. You know it and I know it. Keep those things in mind. Find the kind of balance. I like having, and I've shared this with you before, I like having in my physical possession I don't care what the dollar amount is you want to invest, $100,000, $10,000, $500,000, doesn't make any difference. I, for physical position, normally recommend about a third of the money that I wish to devote to precious metals. And when you buy it, shut up about it. Don't tell your cousins, your sisters, your brothers. You know, the sister may tell the boyfriend who tells his brother who's a crook. We'll get to that in a minute. And maybe a third of your money into silver. You know, barterable, tradable silver, whether it's 1 ounce rounds or eagles, or if you get a decent enough price. I'm not a big fan of 90% silver any longer. The only people who understand it are coin shops, pawn shops, and the fewer and fewer of us older folks that are still alive and kicking that understand the meaning of that stuff. The average person on the street doesn't get it. That's why I go out. Again, today, I got a 1965 40% silver quarter in change today. I don't have time to calculate the value for you right now, but the fact of the matter is it's worth more than 25 cents because 40% of its content is silver. There are still times I get old 90% dimes and quarters in trade. And I've shared with you the day some years ago where my bank gave me change in a nickel and something wasn't right, and I looked at it, and it was a World War II nickel that was comprised of 35% silver. Oh, yeah. During World War II, there was a major shortage of nickel for the war effort. They replaced it with silver. How amazing. So that's my usual recommendation. Somewhere in the area of about 30% in silver, the balance in gold. The gold becomes more portable. The woman can put it in her purse. The guy can stick it in his pocket. If you got it in a tube, you can move with it. I bore you to death telling you the story of my old client from Louisiana. One of my earliest clients, early 90s, 91, 92, who bought 100-ounce bars of silver and bought gold pieces, quarter-ounce gold pieces. And Katrina hit. They had to vacate. They had young kids. They went to Atlanta, lived with a sister. They had to leave the silver at home. They took the gold with them. Of course, when they got home, the silver had been lifted. No, it didn't float out to the ocean. But they were able to survive on the gold they were able to take with them. That's the key. You've got too much silver, it becomes heavy, weighs you down. Bulky. You can always convert gold back into silver, remember that, but get some. Now, one of my best friends recently discovered, to his shock and dismay, that 5 1-ounce gold coins have been stolen from his home. And I feel bad because I'd encouraged him to buy some physical metal, giving him some tips and pointing him in certain directions. But what's especially disconcerting about the theft is that my friend had the coins stored in a safe, hidden from view, securely locked with a key hidden. He thought his gold was safe, a reasonable assumption given the precautions he had taken. But all those measures weren't enough. And based on what he knows, he strongly suspects it was a relative, partly because of the person's background and partly because they were one of the few familiar enough with the house to know where the key might be. Of course, the police didn't have enough evidence to make an arrest. Fingerprints, for one, couldn't be successfully lifted from the safe. So the friend was in shock. That didn't represent all the gold he owned, not insignificant, but gold was at $1,400 an ounce at the time. Basically, that means that the thief took off with about $7,000. But he became further consternated by how it went down. The robber only took part of his stash. Evidently, it made it look like his gold hadn't been disturbed. And the key had been put back in place. And for that reason, he could not pinpoint a specific time period that the coins were stolen. The cost to him has been far more than monetary. He loved his bullion coins. He collected at least one from almost every country that produced them. And he would occasionally take them out of the safe because they were, in his words, beautiful. He just loved the weight of them in his hand. And his stash was beginning to build up to a point where he had enough savings for almost any emergency. And the pain deepened further when he learned that, thanks to current IRS rules, he could not even write off the loss. So he was foregoing a homeowner's claim, given the industry's reputation for dropping customers for making small claims. Well, needless to say, the gentleman was no longer storing his gold and silver in that safe. He would be the kind that would normally shy away from using a bank safe deposit box, but not any longer. But even with that, he knew this method was not perfect, so explored all options and decided to follow a suggestion that, time allowing, I'll share with you toward the end of this program tonight. So after the dust had settled, he told me that, yes, he felt violated and was still angry, and it made him suspicious of others around him, a feeling that he hates. But what I suddenly realized, he said, was how valuable gold is becoming again. It's not a barbarous relic anymore. It's not a pretty coin or a hunk of metal or a commodity or even an investment. It really is money. And it's scary to think how dicey things might get when everyone sees gold as money again. Friend is not poor. And there were other valuables the thief could have snatched, but he took the gold. And so what about you? How safe is your safe? Are you clever hiding spots, clever enough? Now, there are some common places to store your gold. But our friend had overlooked one of the basic rules of home storage. So, time allowing, we share all of this with you. It's kind of where and how you should store your precious metals so you can avoid the same pain and loss that he experienced. One of the things that I don't like, and a perfect example is what we've just read about this week, the FBI gaining access to a bank and apparently has been able to put their hands on millions upon millions upon millions of dollars worth of items that were in safety deposit boxes in a bank. That's amongst the reasons I don't like nor trust safety deposit boxes. And on top of the fact that I read a piece today about J.P. Morgan is now considered probably one of the worst banks to even do business with. They're in the worst shape of all of them. And yet most people will run on down, store gold in the safety deposit box at the local bank. And if you go that route, use a local bank. You want to be able to get your goods in an emergency, which is one of the reasons you own it in the first place. So don't keep it in a different state or a distant city. Keep it close by. And yet, as the friend acknowledged, the safe deposit box isn't perfect. First, your access is restricted. You can only get to the goods during regular banking hours. Secondly, safe deposit boxes are not insured against robbery. And thirdly, a bank box compromises your privacy. It provides a generous clue for the government in case it ever decides to repeat FDR's confiscatory policies. So a related option would be to use a depository or private vault. They're outside of the financial system, though they do tend to be on the expensive side. They're not plentiful. You may not live near one. So now we come to the term of midnight gardening. That comes from people burying their gold at night so others won't notice the digging. But the alternative is to find a separate reason for the excavation, like fixing a pipe or removing a stump and working the daylight. But either way, before those of you who are used to clean fingernails pass on this method, consider it its advantages. It won't be damaged in a fire. A burglar would need to know where to go looking for it. Because a lot can happen in the world that won't disturb buried gold. Of course, there are a few practicalities. If you decide to go the shovel route, first use the right container, something airtight, waterproof, especially important if you're storing numismatics or burying silver in any form. We've been told those water bottles that hikers use work pretty well, but choose one heavy enough to stand up to years of erosion and persistent insects. Of course, another choice is a small section of PVC pipe from your local hardware store. Cap the ends and then bury it in a shallow puddle of cement. Oh, don't use a coffee can, by the way, because the color on the metal can bleed. Protect from scratching. Put each coin in a plastic baggie or something similar. Well, you can go on down to the coin shop and pick up those little flippers. They're very heavy, very, very heavy. And they can be seen, you know, you can see through them. But they'll do a real good job of protecting each coin from individuality. So now, where do you bury it? Well, your location should be neither too easy nor too difficult to find. Not too easy, so the gold won't be found by a thief, but not so difficult that years later you or your heirs have trouble locating it. Complicated instructions like treasure maps can get muddled with time and create the risk your gold would never be dug up. Find a place on property that you own that you'll always remember, but that isn't obvious if someone learns you buried something valuable. Keep in mind, most modern metal detectors can operate to a depth of about 4 feet for objects as large as a stash of coins or bars. There's also ground-penetrating radar, used primarily by forensic investigators that can detect where digging has occurred, as well as satellites that can pinpoint where the ground has been disturbed. Who knows? The satellite maybe even caught you doing that digging in the middle of the night. Oh, yeah, I go outside in the back patio at 1, 2 o'clock in the morning to have a cigarette. Yeah, I still smoke. Been doing it for too damn long to give it up now, and I frankly don't give a damn. I look up in the sky, there's satellites up there, scanning the earth, seeing what's going on down there. Of course, the next option is to do what the buddy did, hide it in your house. Use a home safe. Oh yeah, indoor storage is practical for smaller quantities. You can probably think of dozens of places in your home where no one would think to look. Avoid any place obvious like a jewelry box or a cookie jar. Of course, the disadvantage to that method is exposure, as my friend can tell you, theft along with fire, flood, and other natural disasters. So, consider using a safe. Ideally, one secured to the floor. As one dealer said, a safe can be brought in on a two-wheeler and taken out on a two-wheeler, if it hasn't been attached to a building or at least hidden. I've heard good things about Liberty safes. They got a replacement guarantee. Obvious reasons my friend is now gun-shy about using a safe with a key lock. Why in the hell you'd ever use a safe with a key lock is a joke to me. So, if you use a floor safe, locations for it include the garage. This is an interesting one. Under the refrigerator. Or anywhere you can place something over it. Another option might be under the floor of a storage or a garden shed. You can both install and access it without being seen day or night. Do it yourself. Some of the kits make it easier than you might expect. Don't hire a contractor. Don't hire a contractor. Now that's an interesting one. Why would you do that? Now somebody knows. Hey, we was over at Bob and Mary's house last week, and we was installing a safe. I wonder what they're putting in it, Harry. Finally, you want to leave the right trail. However you choose to store your gold, let exactly one person that you know the details. It needs to be someone in whose honesty and discretion you have complete confidence. It'll be that person's job to access the gold if you're incapacitated or kicked the bucket. If you're using a safe deposit box, his or her name should be included in the box registration. And they should know where to go get the key. Tell one person, only one. No one else should ever know. And this is especially important if you're using home storage. You don't want to come home someday to find your house turned upside down because some ding-dong heard that you're living in a treasure chest. Even worse would be to come home and find a looter waiting to have a chat with you. And our friend kept quiet about his goal, but admitted some family knew about it, and that's all it took. All it could take is the wrong family member mentioning it to another in-law who's a crook. There's just no other way to say it. And I've said this to many, many people for a lot of years. Keep quiet about your gold and your silver. Shut up about it. Unless you've reached a point in life where you're depending on your children for help with your affairs, a child is not a good choice as your gold storage confidant. Kids talk. And you don't know whom they might tell or how far the story might travel, but you do need to tell someone, regardless of your storage method. I heard of an old miner. No kidding. Guy left a treasure map for his kids to help him figure out where he'd hidden the gold. But somebody else found the map. His kids never got their inheritance. Now, what if the kids had received the map but weren't very good treasure hunters? I mean, I've read similar stories about descendants who knew that gold had been left for them but had no idea where it was. But what if more than one person already knows you've got the goods? Then maybe it's time to review your home storage methods to be absolutely sure they are adequate. Are you listening, Sharon? Or use one of the other methods? So what's the best place to store your physical gold? Your choices boil down to three. Store it in a safe deposit box, bury it, or hide it indoors. Each method has pluses and minuses, but maybe the best method is a combination of them all. In other words, diversify your storage locations. My friend could have been wiped out if the robber hadn't been trying to be sneaky. But last but not least, do not let this scare you off from buying bullion. It is still the asset that offers the best monetary protection for the foreseeable future. Not owning it may leave you feeling robbed when you go to use your paper dollars and wake up to discover that they won't buy you as much as you thought. That's not a theft you can prevent unless you own gold. I hope that this little commentary I've shared with you, which actually was written some years ago, March 3rd of 2011, by a guy named Jeff Clark. It makes probably more sense than any other way I could present it to you. I've shared this on the air before. Probably not as verbally as I have tonight. For some reason, I keep thinking this is Friday, but it's obviously not. It's Tuesday. I have no particular offers tonight. We're talking generalities. I cannot control the markets right now. Product has tightened up again. Even my local suppliers admitted he has absolutely no silver rounds available. He may have some, maybe some American Eagles, maybe some Canadian, some British stuff, but that's it. You got an interest? You know where to find me, 602-799-8214. You can also text me. Let me know if you've got an interest in looking for something, and we'll see what we can do for you. Thanks much. Lord willing, I'll see you tomorrow. Good night. Do you think we have time? These are the days of the open hand. We will not be the last. Look around now.
These are the days of the beggars and the choosers. This is the year of the hungry man, whose place is in the past. Hand in hand with ignorance and legitimate excuses, the rich declare themselves poor, and most of us are not sure if we have it too much, but we're taking our chances, say. I sang 20 years and a day, but nothing changed. The human race found some other guy and walked into the flame. It's hard to love, there's so much to hate. Hanging on to hope when there is no hope to speak of. In the wounded skies above, say it's much too late. Then maybe we should all be praying for time. Charity, charity is the coat you wear twice a year, yeah, yeah. This is the year of the guilty man. Your television takes a stand, and you find that what was over there is over here. So you scream from behind your door, say what's mine is mine and not yours. I may have too much, but I'll take my chances, say. I sang it 20 years and a day, there's nothing changed. The human race found some other guy and walked into the flames. It's hard to love, Jesus has so much to hate. Hanging on to hope, there is no hope to speak out. In the wounded skies above, say it's much too late. Then maybe we should all be praying for time.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
You can't handle the truth!
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit RepublicBroadcasting.org today, because you can handle the truth.